You remain standing for the reading of the Word of God. It comes to us once again this morning from Luke chapter 4. This morning we'll begin in the 38th verse, read to the end of the chapter. After leaving the synagogue, he entered Simon's house. Now Simon's mother-in-law was suffering from a high fever, and they asked him about her. And he stood over her and rebuked the fever, and it left her. And immediately she got up and began to serve him. As the sun was setting, all those who had any who were sick with various kinds of diseases brought them to him, and he laid his hands on each of them and cured them. Demons also came out of many, shouting, "You are the Son of God." But he rebuked them and would not allow them to speak, because they knew that he was the Messiah. At daybreak, he departed and went into a deserted place, and the crowds were looking for him. When they reached him, they wanted to prevent him from leaving them, but he said to them, "I must proclaim the good news of the kingdom of God to other cities also, for I was sent for this purpose." So he continued proclaiming the message in the synagogues of Judea. It's the word of God for the people of God. Maybe see. Well, are there any Eagles fans here this morning? When you say that around here, most people think Georgia Southern, or maybe if you're a football fan, Philadelphia, or even the National Bird. You can even see some of those spectacular creatures in our area occasionally if you look around. But I'm talking about the rock and roll band variety, the Eagles. I know a lot of you like the Eagles. The Eagles recorded an incredible number of hit songs that made it big, but my personal favorite was a song that never really made it big. It was on one of their albums. It was entitled "Learn to Be Still." Some of you may know that song. They have many more, it's a little bit more obscure of their songs. Honestly, I never really found the Eagles to be particularly spiritual or theological in their songs. And so this song, when I first heard it, I almost thought, where did this come from? I mean, it's this incredibly biblically based message in this song. It goes like this. "It's just another day in paradise as you stumble to your bed. You'd give anything to silence the voices ringing in your head. You thought that you could find happiness just over that green hill. You thought that you would be satisfied, but you never will. Learn to be still. We're like sheep without a shepherd. We don't know how to be alone. So we wander around this desert and wind up following the wrong gods home. The flock cries out for another, and they keep answering the bell. And one more starry-eyed Messiah meets a violent farewell. Learn to be still. Now the flowers in your garden, they don't smell so sweet. Maybe you've forgotten the heaven lying at your feet. There are so many contradictions in all these messages we send. We keep asking, how do I get out of here? Where do I fit in? Though the world is torn and shaken, even if your heart is breaking, it's waiting for you to awaken, and someday you will learn to be still. Learn to be still. But you just keep on running." There's something about that song that every time I heard it produced a longing in me for stillness. That kind of stillness they were longing for in the song. I really think it's not a novel idea with them. I think they borrowed the idea from another singer-songwriter that was really popular. His name was David. He had a popular hit called Psalm 46. The 10th verse says, "Be still and know that I am God." I don't think I was always the way I am now. I mean, I was never diagnosed as, I can't remember the letters now. But these days I act like I am. Hyperactive, attention deficit, I act like I am. I think part of what's happened to me is I am conditioned by my environment. And on the one hand, I'm vocationally conditioned to be like I am. To stay busy. I mean, after all, there is always more to get done than we can ever possibly do in a day. Always on call, so to speak. And so there's inner urge to stay busy, to keep checking things off the list that have to be done. And there's even this sort of nagging, guilty feeling when we are still. that something's being left undone. Someone's being left unattended to. And then, for some of you, maybe like for me, there is this environmental condition of living in the city. I never lived in the city. I grew up in quiet places. And I find that the city, you know the saying, city never sleeps. And it really doesn't. I mean, it's never really quiet, never really dark, never really still. There's always light and traffic and stores are always open and sirens are always blaring. And it seems there's never stillness in the city. And of course, there's personality that drives some of us. You know, that type A thing that says, I need to compete and achieve and succeed and win. So no wonder there's a longing in me, and I suspect some of you, for stillness. Stillness, a place of stillness, but more than that, an inner stillness. I mean, we think of it sometimes as just a sign of the times. It's just the way the world is these days, right? But read the gospel. The world around Jesus was incredibly chaotic, frenzied in its pace. Everywhere Jesus went, there was a crowd. There were lines of people waiting for him to heal, feed, teach, deliver, answer. He could not escape it no matter where he went. And what's really interesting to me reading the gospel story is how quickly his disciples were affected by all this frenzied activity going on around Jesus and consequently around them, especially those who were fishermen. You know, some of those men, their whole lives had been built around quiet, lonely places, waiting for fish to rise on still waters at dawn or dusk. They knew all about stillness, but suddenly they were in this frenzy of activity. And their new vocation of fishing for men was very different. And one of the most telling incidents, much like the one we read about this morning, Jesus had been dealing with one of these huge crowds of people, healing the sick, freeing the possessed. And as was his pattern, he found a moment when people's heads were turned, their attentions were distracting, and he just slipped away out of the crowd and retreats to what most often is described in the Gospels as a deserted place, a place of solitude, to pray. And when the frantic disciples led by Simon Peter, speaking to type A people, finally track him down, they say to him, "Everyone is looking for you." Meaning, what are you doing out here? What are you doing out here with all of these people that need so much and you're just out here in this deserted place doing nothing? So it would appear, when there's so much to do. In another instant, the disciples themselves had just returned from a mission that Jesus had sent them on. They're excitedly telling Jesus about all the things they had accomplished. The gospel writer describes the environment around them as being so busy, they had no leisure even to eat. And Jesus invites them away to, once again, a deserted place. Now, it doesn't say whether or not they were happy about being invited away to a deserted place. Of course, if you know that story, you know when they got to the other side of the lake to that deserted place, there were 5,000 people waiting on them there. That was their life. But in that frenetic environment, one of the primary disciplines we see Jesus consistently practice was the discipline of solitude or stillness. Removing himself from it all and stilling himself. At least 10 times in the Gospels, Jesus is described as retreating to a solitary place or a deserted place. It happened after his baptism, before he was launching his ministry. It happened before he would choose the 12. After John the Baptist was killed, after feeding the 5,000, and before going to the cross are but a few of those times when Jesus retreats to a solitary place. And this whole idea of retreating to solitude is not just new with Jesus. Remember how God would lead Moses periodically up on the mountain alone, just him and God. Or John the Baptist, who lived most of his life in a solitary place, coming out periodically to the crowds of people to teach and preach. And then there was Paul, who after experiencing his call from God, says that he retreated to Arabia, a desert place, for 3 years before beginning. Unless we think that Jesus was just one of those sort of flaky, floating through the universe, content to sit on the mountain and contemplate the meaning of life, spiritual guru type of people, read the Gospels, it's not who he was. He is only occasionally still, because he is always traveling to the next place, the next work. And as he tells this crowd who tries to get him to stay that day, I can't stay here. I have to move on. There is too much to do, and there is so little time to do it. He self-describes himself in John's Gospel as modeling his life after his Father, who he said is always working. And I too am always working, he said about himself. So look at Jesus' example. It seems to me it may be even more important for those who are driven, busy with demanding lives and work and ambitious personalities to discipline ourselves to stop and pull away, to learn to be still. And stillness and solitude, understand this, they are not about rest. Rest was not the purpose of the discipline. Otherwise, why would Jesus get up early in the morning before the day ever broke if stillness and solitude were about rest? Sabbath was about rest. Solitude was about hearing. Getting in a place still enough and quiet enough he could hear the Father's voice. Which ties today's passage to what we've talked about the last 2 weeks. The last 2 weeks we've been talking about hearing God speak through the Word, and how the Bible can become my story, and I can hear God speak to me in it and through it. Or last week, how we talked about the Word judges the thoughts and intentions of our hearts. It speaks to us about things that we are blind to and have a hard time hearing about ourselves. Things that are stumbling blocks to our relationship with God or our relationship with other people. But I am pretty sure God does not speak loudly in the Word or otherwise. I would argue that God simply refuses to compete for our attention. Unlike the world. Now, the world is perfectly happy to compete for our attention. It does it by trying to be louder and more outrageous than everyone else, so that we cannot help but listen, look, see. God refuses to do that. I mean, even like the child who's pulling on your pants leg saying, I've got to tell you something. God just doesn't go there. Maybe no story in the Bible captures that more than the story of the prophet Elijah. I referred to it not too long ago. You may remember how Queen Jezebel sought to take his life. And he ran away from her and finally fell exhausted, saying to God, just go ahead and kill me now. He was led instead far into the wilderness to a mountain, alone. On that mountain, he experienced a desert windstorm, an earthquake, and a raging wildfire. And he said God was in none of those things. And then it says there was the sound of sheer silence. Sometimes it's translated a still, small voice. And it was unmistakable. And Elijah knew God had come and was speaking. Or the way David put it was, he makes us lie down in green pastures and he leads us beside still waters to a quiet place. In order, David said, to restore our soul. Because the noise and the busyness and the striving can kill the soul. It robs us of the ability to hear God speak to our hearts the comforting word, the wise word, the peaceful word. So solitude and stillness, as valuable as they are, can be really difficult to practice for a number of reasons. I mean, some of us simply fear being alone. And so it drives us to the noise. It drives us to the crowds. Because deep down, we're not sure we really want to hear from God. I mean, maybe it is we're just afraid about what God will say to us, or maybe what would God ask of us. Or it may be we already know what God has said to us. We already know what God has asked of us, and we've pushed it aside and we don't want to hear it again. So we just keep busy, noisy, where we can't hear. Or sometimes we're just simply so driven to produce and accomplish that stillness and solitude seem so unproductive. You might remember that Mary Martha story, sort of one of the really significant fundamental stories that Jesus tells in the gospel. Jesus and the disciples come to their house, of course, and Martha is busy scrambling up a meal for he and all the disciples. Mary chooses to sit still at Jesus' feet and listen. Martha becomes increasingly exasperated because her sister doesn't help her and finally goes to Jesus and says, you know, how can you let her sit there and do nothing while I do all this work? Make her get up and do this. And Jesus says, Martha, you are distracted. You know what it means when you're distracted? It means you can't hear. You're distracted by many things. Mary, in this moment, has chosen the better thing, to be still, so she can hear for a moment. Yeah, so when we're in a world, sometimes to sit in stillness and quiet at Jesus' feet is a form of self-denial. What I deny myself is the satisfaction of accomplishment, of knowing I've gotten something else done, I've checked this off the list. Or maybe I deny myself the reverence of a world that pats us on the back when we overfunction and overachieve at the expense of stillness. Thirdly, we have to understand that other people simply will not respect nor understand it if they don't practice it. It's like the disciples looking for Jesus. Everybody's looking for you. What are you doing sitting here? They just don't understand it yet. Dallas Willard said, other people need us to keep their lives in place. Need us to keep their lives in place. He said, what they don't understand is they need God, not us. But they haven't yet learned that. The reality is, you know this and I know this, we can't just always run off to the desert. There's too many demands. Too many people that depend upon us. There are children that we're raising. There's work that's important. There are parents that we're caring for. There is an endless list of things that demand our time and our attention and our energy and our effort. So we can't always just run off to the desert, but I always think, Wesley Gardens is not far away. And right across the street in that building we just renovated, on the third floor, there is a prayer room. It's always quiet there. As quiet as the city can be. And this place is pretty deserted and quiet during the week, too. So we can find those moments in those places. Maybe it's a quiet moment in our house before anybody else gets up. I know it's a challenge to see all these children down here for all of you. Maybe it's a moment in the car when we're sitting in that long line of traffic, fretting about it. It could just be one of those solitary, quiet places. Maybe it's a walk during lunch. A moment on a park bench. Maybe it's a prayer closet or a chair set apart in my home. Sometimes, like Jesus, we just have to steal away one of those moments. Because it won't be given to us unless we take it. The eagles are right about one thing. Most of us will have to learn to be still. We have been conditioned not to be. In fact, it's possible that we were even taught being still was a form of punishment, right? Or at least discipline because we did something bad. Go to time out, right? Of course, I guess there's a point in time out. We want our children to sit there, be still, and think about what you've done. Not necessarily a bad thing. I just find it funny that as adults, we never put ourselves in time out. Maybe we need to put ourselves in time out and say, sit here and think about what you've done. Or what you haven't done, or what you need to do. I think occasionally, though, the house could be, you know, we could get the silent treatment at home every once in a while, and the house becomes, you know, that kind of quiet place. It's just that when that happens, I'm not sure how much I'm listening to God in those moments as much as I'm complaining to God about my spouse who's giving me the silent treatment for something I did or didn't do. Maybe that's what the eagles meant in that line that said, we wander around this desert and we follow the wrong gods home. The gods of complaint. The gods of having. Learn to be still. Jesus taught us God is waiting in the stillness for us, in the desert place. But we will have to be willing to leave the crowds and their demands behind for a moment. Because one thing we can be sure of if we do, they will be waiting when we get back. They always were. They always will be. They always will be. They always will be.